Okay, this morning we begin to transition from the first half of Sefer Shmos into the second half. We've seen our birth as a family, our birth as a nation. We've seen the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim and how that forged us. We stood at the base of Har Sinai, and now we come to Parshas Truma, the beginning of the Mishkan. We're not going to spend time on, but the obvious question is, you know, the next five Parshios beg the question. The redundancy and the repetition and the chronology. We have Truma Tetzaveh, which delineate the detailed laws of the utensils and the tabernacle. Then we have an interruption with Kisisa, which tells us the story of the Cheta Egel, the sin of the golden calf. And then Vayakal Pekudei, we repeat Truma Tetzaveh all over again. So when did the mandate, when did the mitzvah of building the Mishkan come? Did it come after the mistake of the Cheta Egel? Did it precede the Cheta Egel? It is a great discussion, and one that we are not going to get into today. Suffice it to say that the Mishkan represents a very, very significant transition for the Jewish people. Because God goes from being a purely conceptual, theoretical, intangible, and of course the Ribono Shel Olam always remains, one of the principles of our faith is that He is intangible, but the Jewish people, at least this is the way Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and his Kuzari understands it, the Jewish people craved a physical medium through which they could connect. It's very hard. God is invisible, you can't hear Him, feel Him, touch Him, smell Him. How do you know He's there? How can you with full confidence talk to Him and hear from Him? And so, the Mishkan was given the opportunity to be in a physical structure, to see physical utensils, to have physical interaction. And this was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response to the Cheta Egel. According to Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the Cheta Egel was not some great act of infidelity. It was not a great act of idolatry. It wasn't abandoning the Ribono Shel Olam. It was the people's desperation to connect through something physical. Moshe was that physical medium. He disappeared. He went up on the mountain, and he didn't come back when he was supposed to come back. So they said, how are we supposed to connect now? We used to be able to look to Moshe, and touch Moshe, and hear from Moshe. And he was the mouthpiece. He was the conduit. He was the medium through which we connected to the Almighty. And where is He? So they went and they built an Egel, not as an act of abandoning God, but in an attempt to draw closer to God. But it was a counterfeit attempt. It was not authentic. It wasn't at the direction and the directive of the Almighty. So the Ribono Shel Olam says, you made a terrible mistake. You can't figure this out on your own. This is my world I created, I have designs for it, and I'll tell you how we operate together. I created the operating system of this world. You can't reprogram it. So the Cheta Egel is a terrible mistake. But, says the Ribono Shel Olam, at least according to the Kuzari, I am validating, I'm acknowledging a genuine need or urge to connect through something physical. And so, while your way was counterfeit, let me give you the authentic means through which we can connect, and that is the Mishkan. Here's the Mishkan, filled with kelim, utensils, filled with karbanos, and that's what we begin now in Parshas Truma. So a quick overview, the of course most famous sentence in our Parsha, which makes our Parsha relevant beyond just the time in which the Mishkan was originally built, and that is V'asuli Mikdash V'Shachanti B'Socham. We'll come back to that in a moment. But God says, build for me a sanctuary and I will dwell in it. No? Close? I will dwell in them. Them. Bisocham. And of course it's incongruous. It's not consistent. Build for me a singular mikdash, a singular sanctuary, and then I will dwell in them. So why the incongruity? Why would we have a lack of consistency? We'll come back to that in a moment. And so we have the introduction of the idea of give a truma, give a v'yikhuli. It should say, what should it say? Not take for me, but, right? Matthew was in here a moment ago plugging the big March 5th weekend, and he didn't say, I'm asking all of you to take from me a donation. What did he say? I'm urging all of you v'yitnu, to give. So why does our parsha begin with v'yikhu rather than v'yitnu? You give, you don't take. You're not supposed to be on the take. You're supposed to be giving, not taking. So why v'yikhu rather than v'yitnu? That is the introduction. Everyone needs to dig deep. A truma. The word truma is not just a donation. You know, in Israel, if they're soliciting you, or they find their way to America to solicit you, and still do it in Hebrew, they ask you to make a truma. They ask you to litrom. What does litrom mean? Even in modern Hebrew, it means to donate, but it means more than to donate. Because the root of the word truma is resh vav mem. What is resh vav mem? Is high, is exalted, is to elevate. And the idea is that when you do make a donation, when it's genuine, when it's heartfelt, when you are supporting something meaningful, then you are elevating your money. Then you are elevating your self. Then you're elevating the physical world. When you take your resources and you allocate them towards improving the world and fulfilling God's intent for the world, then it is a truma. It's not a donation in the sense of a donation. You're elevating yourself, you're elevating your resources, and you're elevating all the hard work that went in to earning that money. And that's v'yikhu rather than v'yitnu. And then we go through all the kalim. We've studied it in the past. Go online and you can listen. We have the Aron and its description, its exact dimensions, the unusual features of the Aron, the fact that the Aron had the staves, had the poles in it all the time. The previous year, I don't remember when it was, but if you listen online, we quoted 3 or 4 or 5 different explanations of what it means. Even when the ark is at rest, you leave the poles that were there only for the purpose of carrying them. They're left in. Why would they be left in? What would be the symbolism? The ark has gold on the outside and on the inside, but it's made of acacia wood, of atzei shittim. And from here we learn tocho kaboro, that a person's inside needs to match their outside. If that's the case, why didn't they just make it with gold all the way through? Why have wood inside and just cover it with gold on the outside and inside? Why not be gold all the way through? We've discussed all of this in the past. And now I'm worried because someone said to me on Shabbos, said, you know, when you do the overview each year, you like to quote a lot of the same Divrei Torah. I said, well, that's impressive. How'd you know that? He said, because I listened to the previous couple of years each week on my drive and I hear. So now I'm going to be very hesitant and careful. So anyway, listen to previous years. So you have the Aron, you have the cover with the Kruvim. In previous years, we talked about the Kruvim, the idea of these cherub, these angelic figures, childlike figures that sat on the covering of the ark. In one place the Torah tells us, they faced each other. In another place the Torah tells us, they faced apart. Which is it? Did they face each other? Did they face apart? To which the Talmud notes, Chazal explain, it depends. When we were Osim Ritzono Shel Makom, when we were beloved by the Almighty, when we were in a good place with God, it's a loving embrace. And when not, we turned away. I invoked this Chazal when we did our 4-part series on Shalom Bias, the Gottman method of Shalom Bias. We did a 4-part PowerPoint series using the authority on marriage today, Dr. John Gottman, and he talks about there the notion of bid for connection and the response that we give when our spouse comes in the room or sends us a text or calls us on the phone. That is a bid for connection. And in that bid for connection, you could turn towards, you could turn against, you could turn away. There's different responses that you can offer. And he talks about a healthy marriage has to have a certain ratio of how many times you turn towards for every time you turned against. There's 3 responses to that bid for connection. There's turn against. So your wife walks in, she just came from the mall, she's got 15 shopping bags in her hand. She walks in and she's made a bid for connection. She says, hey, how are you? How is your Sunday going? That's her bid for connection. You're on the computer, at the computer desk. So a bid towards is to say, oh, it looks like you had a productive day at the mall. How was it? What'd you get? Tell me, show me, what's going on? How was your day? A bid against is, oh my God, I cannot believe how much you bought. You went last Sunday and the Sunday before and you don't know this. You don't need this. And do you know what this costs? And then you just end up returning it. And you ask me how you look in it. And that's a no-win question. And that's a bid, that is a bid against. And then there's a turn away, which is you just keep typing on the computer and you grunt at the person who walked in the room and you don't even look up or make eye contact or even acknowledge they're here. And so Gottman talks about the ratio you need of the turning towards for every time that you turned away or turned against. You can go online and listen to that 4-part series as well. We dealt with that in detail with PowerPoints employing Gottman's language from his amazing books and his incredible research. I only raise it here because I talked about how you see that in the Mishkan. The Kruvim were the original effort of turning towards and turning against. The Kruvim at times, when they were close, were embraced, were looking at one another, versus looking away from one another when they are disconnected. Fascinatingly, when we just learned the Daf, we're learning the Daf now, and Gittin, the Sugyas, the Agarata, all about the Churban. When Titus HaRasha, when the Roman general came into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, how did he find the Kruvim? Were they turning away from each other or towards each other at the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? They were turning towards one another. Which begs the question, if the Beis HaMikdash is being destroyed, the Jewish people are so unworthy, why at that moment would they be turning towards rather than against? It's a great question, and also one for another time. We then have the description of the I have to make sure you come back each year, especially if I repeat myself. So the only way is if I leave you with some open-ended questions. Then we have the description of the Shulchan. It's also made out of Atzei Shittim, this unusual wood called Shittim wood. And we have the descriptions of the Shulchan. And then we have the menorah. Then we have the multiple covers. There were four or five covers of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle itself. You had the Chatzer, you had the walls of the perimeter, and that was the courtyard. Then you had the Ulam, you had the Heichal, you had the actual structure itself, and it had layers and layers of covering, and inside it was divided between the Kodesh, the Holy, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. We have a description of how they were made, the Krashim, the planks that held up the Heichal. The planks, normally when you build, you lay the wood horizontally. And here, the wood is vertical. And why is that? So it's the symbolism of reaching, of yearning, of stretching up towards Shamayim. Rabbeinu Bachya says, why is it that animals walk on four and human beings walk on two legs? Animals walk on all four legs, humans walk on two. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, because an animal is on four legs, it's looking down. It belongs to the earth. It's connected to the physical world. An animal in Hebrew is a behema. The Maharal says, ba, ma. What you see is what you get. The animal has no self-awareness, has no ambition, has no goals. The animal just wants to eat what it wants to eat and defecate where it's going to defecate and find whatever counterpart female animal it can find and do whatever it wants to do. An animal, a behema, is bama. What you see is what you get. So the animal walks on all four because it's connected to the earth. But the human being walks on two. Why? Because we're constantly stretching. We're yearning for Shamayim. Our feet are firmly planted here on earth, but we really belong to the heavens, and we're yearning and stretching and aspiring. We are spiritually ambitious, and that's why we stand on two. So the crush and the planks, they are placed derech gidulo, the way that they grow. We actually learn from here the halacha of lulav and esrog. We learn all of these halachas of any time that you use something that grew in the ground for a mitzvah, you use it, it's positioned in the way that it grew from the ground. We learn that here from the krashim, and the reason that they stand vertically rather than horizontally is the Mishkan represents a place of striving, represents a place of yearning. Then we have the parochas, which is what we're going to study together momentarily. The great parochas was the magnificent curtain that separated the Kodesh, the sanctuary, from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from the place that only the Kohen Gadol entered on Yom HaKippurim. And then we have the description of the Mizbeach, the altar, which sat outside in the chatzer, and then we have the description of the chatzer of the courtyard, and that is those are the details of our parsha. I'll just tell you lastly, by way of introduction, you see that most of the utensils in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, were made out of what material? Atzei Shittim. They were made out of Atzei Shittim. What are Atzei Shittim? If you look at Art Scroll, the Halakha Art Scroll translates, Atzei Shittim, what are Shittim? Acacia wood. What is acacia wood? What is acacia wood? If you go to Home Depot or Lowe's, can you get some acacia wood? I have no idea. I never tried. You can in Israel. Okay. So the Medrash Tanchuma identifies shittim tree as one of the 24 species of cedar. I don't know if in fact acacia is a species of cedar, but the Medrash Tanchuma identifies acacia wood, Atzei Shittim, as one of the species of cedar. And the Medrash Rabbah, Parsha Lamed Gimel, the Medrash Rabbah comments, the world was not worthy of using cedar trees, and they were created only for the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. What does that mean? What does that mean? The world was not worthy of Atzei Shittim, of acacia wood. The only reason that God created this type of wood was exclusively for use in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. What does that mean? What does that mean? Rav Menachem Ben Zion Zaks, in his work Menachem Zion, Rav Menachem Ben Zion Zaks was a Rav in Chicago, and he was the son-in-law of the Har Tzvi, the son-in-law of Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and he was the grandfather of a member of our shul, Mr. Landis. So in his Sefer Menachem Zion, he suggests the following. The Gemara Maseches Tainis, Daf Chaf Amud Aleph, says, a person should always be as soft as a reed and not as rigid as a cedar. A cedar tree is known to be inflexible. It's rigid. Whereas a reed, you see, it's flexible. It blows with the wind. And the Gemara advises us that in forming our personality, in leading our lives, be flexible. Bend like a reed. Be flexible. Don't be such a rigid person. Get along with people. Adjust. Be flexible. Get along. Be like a reed. Don't be rigid like a cedar. Don't be rigid like a cedar. The cedar is employed as a symbol of inflexibility, of obstinacy, of being stubborn. And the Gemara is telling us, Chazal is telling us, if you lead life and you're always so stubborn and obstinate and difficult, you're not going to get along with people and you're not going to get very far in life. But what does it mean then that the Medrash says, if the Gemara of Chazal and Tainus tell us, don't be like a cedar, then what does it mean when the Medrash says that the only reason that the cedar was created was for the Mishkan and was for the Beis HaMikdash? So listen to this fantastic shot that the Menachem Ben Sion Sacks, listen to what he says. Where did they get this wood? Rashi in our Parsha tells us, where did they get this wood? They've left Har Sinai, they're wandering in the desert, they're in the Midbar. Where do you find wood in the desert? Where did they get this wood? So Rashi in the beginning of Parsha Truma tells us that Yaakov Avinu had planted cedar trees in Egypt before his death, and he had instructed them, on your way out, while that matzah is baking for those 18 minutes, go cut down the cedar, take the lumber, and carry it with you when you're heading out of Egypt, because you're going to need it. He prophetically saw that there will be this house for Hashem called the Mishkan, and you're going to need the materials to bring it, to build it, so bring the cedar with you. The Medrash Rabbah, that's Rashi. It's from Yaakov Avinu, his forethought, his foresight. He was prophetic, he was prescient, and he told us, plant this in Mitzrayim, you're going to take it with you. But the Medrash Rabbah says it goes to even earlier than that. Even earlier than Yaakov. Where does it come from, this wood? None other than Avram Avinu. Then the city of Beersheba, Torah tells us, in Bereishis Chaf Aleph Lamed Gimel, that Avram planted an Eshel. What's an Eshel? He took cedar trees and he planted them in Beersheba. Then Yaakov cut down those cedar trees and took them on his way to Egypt and replanted them there. So here we have a tradition that these cedar trees, which we're not supposed to emulate or be like because they're too rigid and obstinate, but yet were created exclusively for the purpose of the Mishkan Beis HaMikdash. So where did these unusual trees come from? From Yaakov, and even earlier, from Eshel Avram. They came from Avraham. So what's going on over here? So listen to what he explains. The truth is that in life, at work and at the gym and vis-a-vis our family and our friends and in life, we should be flexible like a reed. Be flexible. Get along. Figure it out. However, when it comes to the Mishkan, when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, that's the exclusive place. That's where we're supposed to be like a cedar. What does that mean? That's where we're supposed to be stubborn and unwavering. That's where we're supposed to be uncompromising and persistent and tenacious. When it comes to all other areas of life, be flexible like a reed. But when it comes to your religious life, when it comes to your religious principles, and I think we need to remember this, in an era and in an environment and a society and a culture where our religious principles are often under assault, and we are made to feel that we are somehow cruel, that we are somehow violating civil rights, that we are somehow ancient and outdated, that we are somehow beyond that, we're barbaric and we're cruel, that we have to remember that what Avram Avinu gifted us, and what Yaakov received from him and replanted for us, and that we remember because we use it in our Mishkan, in our Beis HaMikdash, in our Shul, is that while in life we're supposed to be flexible like a reed, when it comes to religious principles and values, we need to be as stubborn and tenacious, and we need to be as persistent, and we need to be as obstinate as a cedar. And that's what the Medrash means, says the Menachem Sion. That cedar was created only for the Mishkan and Beis HaMikdash. In all other areas of life, just get along. Go with the flow. Be flexible. But when it comes to religious values, be like a cedar. So when you look at that Shulchan, and you look at that Aron, and you look at these utensils in the Mishkan, and you see they're made from this wood, you remember that when it comes to these religious symbols, and religious rituals, and religious principles, and religious values, to remember that we are to be as stubborn and persistent as a cedar. And that's perhaps what it means that Avram Avinu, Avram was known as Avram HaIvri. Where did he get that name, Avram HaIvri, the Hebrew? He was Me'aver. He was always on the other side of the world. Everyone was on one side. Everybody was for these rights and those rights and that type of marriage and this type of policy and this type of principle. And Avram had the koach, the inner strength, to be the Ivri, to be Me'aver, to be on the other side. Because he said, this is not, we saw this in last week's Parsha Mishpatim, that you don't achri rabim laros, you don't say, well, if the majority believe that this is the new morality, this is the new ethic, this is the new civil right, this is the new, I guess I have to jump on board. We don't believe in that. We saw that in last week's Parsha. When we have principles and values, we have to stand true to them, and we don't abandon them to follow the majority. And from where do we draw the strength to live that life? Because Avram HaIvri did it. He is the one who planted that original Eshel. He found the cedar. He found the rigid, principled life. And then he gave it to Yaakov. And Yaakov brought it down and planted it in Egypt. And Bnei Yisrael took it out with them. And we are the beneficiaries. We continue when we learn about the Mishkan to remember that. Okay, so now I want to go through the psukim that we're going to talk about, which is Chamishi. Chamishi. Page 458 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash. Perek Chavav Pasuk Lamed Aleph, chapter 26, verse 31. And you'll say, it's the middle of a perek. Why are we starting here? Well, first of all, I don't really care. We're going to start here anyway. But I'll tell you, it's not the prakim are not what matters. As I've shared with you many, many times, the chapter numbers come from non-Jews. They're not from us. You know who introduced the chapter numbers in the Torah? And when they were introduced, which makes it even startling that we continue to use them. What? They were introduced during disputations. When the Christians would publicly debate Jews, trying to prove Jews wrong, and it was a debate that there was no winning option. You either lost or you lost. If you defeated them, you lost. And if you didn't defeat them, you lost. Right? We know the Ramban's famous disputation with Pablo Cristiano. There are famous disputations. So what happened was, they needed to be able to reference chapter and verse when they were trying to argue and debate us, and that's when they assigned numbers. But Soloveitchik was very careful. He never called it a perek to suggest that it's of Jewish origin. He called it a kapitel. That's what chapter it is. Because these are not of Jewish origin. Our origin is, you see the samach? We have psuchos and stumos. We have the break in the parshios. You know, the way that we delineate the Torah is if you look in a tikkun, or you look in a sefer Torah itself, you'll see the break in the parshios, or you'll see where a new paragraph begins on the next line, or you'll see where a new paragraph begins on the same line. Those are called psuchos and stumos and a new parsha and so on. So anyway, here is one of the stumos. There's a samach here. You see that there's a little break? Top of page 458. Art Scroll did a good job of preserving this in the text. You see there's that break? So that's what's called the stumos. Look on the top of the page. The line doesn't just continue. You have space. You have margin. You have white space there. That's a stumos. That means it's the end of one theme and the beginning of another. Sometimes when there is a new theme, it begins in the next line. And at other times, when it's a continuation of the same theme, it continues in the same line, but with a break in between. This is one of the stumos. All of that is to justify why we're starting here. Page 458, Perek Chavav, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. And here we're talking about the paroches. When you learn Truma, Tetzava, and Vayaka, Pakude, you can't help but wonder, what is the relevance to me? We're living Bezman Golos. I know we had Eretz Yisrael, Aschalta de Geula. I love and care about the modern state of Israel as much as anyone, but it's still a Golos. And what makes it still a Golos? You can't go on Har HaBayit, and even if you go on Har HaBayit, you're not allowed to daven, you can't build a shul, and we do not have a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have Ashras HaShechina in its fullest form. So it's still a Golos. So you'll say, here we are living in exile. Even in Israel you can have exile. Right? We know that because Hanukkah, Golos Yavan is called Golos, even though they were in Israel. When there's a lack of Hashras HaShechina, that's called exile. It's not a geographic description, exile. It's a metaphysical description. So here we are, without a Beis HaMikdash. Truma, Tetzava, Vayaka, Pakude, okay, what do you have to rub it in? You're pouring salt in our wounds. We don't have it. And it's irrelevant. All these details and minutiae and plans and diagram and dimensions. And okay, it's enough. So what's its relevance? So our rabbis through the ages have constantly come back to explain how Truma, Tetzava, Vayaka, Pakude are incredibly relevant. So let's go back to that pasuk we spoke about. V'yasuli mikdash v'shachanti b'socham. Make for me in the singular a sanctuary, and I will dwell in them, the plural. them, the plural. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Tazayin Amad Beis says, Chein ta'asu, when the Pasuk says, V'chein ta'asu, and so shall you do. Build this, and so shall you do. And build that, and so shall you do. Says the Gemara, V'chein ta'asu, ledoros, for future generations. The Gemara understands, excuse me, that the details, the plans, the specs, given in this week's Pasha, were not intended for the Mishkan alone, but V'chein ta'asu, ledoros, they inform all generations. And Rashi in our Pasha understands the Gemara literally. Our Pasha is relevant not only to the Mishkan and the Midbar, but it's relevant to the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash and Bikarov, Biameinu, the third Beis HaMikdash. Rashi understands the Gemara literally, but the Ramban challenges Rashi. And the Ramban says, no, you can't tell me V'chein ta'asu l'doros means that these very dimensions and these very specs and these very architectural plans apply for generations. You can't tell me that, says the Ramban. And what is his compelling evidence? Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech did not adhere to these dimensions. When Shlomo HaMelech builds the first Beis HaMikdash, he does not follow to a T the dimensions given in Parshas Truma. So how can you call it Ledoros? What does Rashi mean? What does the Gemara mean? That V'chein ta'asu, V'chein ta'asu means Ledoros. So the Nefesh HaChaim, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, the great Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, the Nefesh HaChaim Rav Chaim Volozhiner offers a beautiful explanation. And he says, V'yasuli mikdash, make for me a sanctuary, v'shachanti b'socham, and I will dwell in them, says the Nefesh HaChaim, that's the answer to our question. In the introduction to our Parsha, God is saying that the diagrams, the details, the utensils, their purposes, I'm not just talking about a temporary Mishkan. Bissocham, I'm talking about your homes, and I'm talking about your lives, and I'm talking about you. Our Parsha is relevant to all generations because it's not just about the physical architectural plans. It's about a metaphysical state. It's about the way we live our lives. The Medrash Tanchuma says in Parshas Pekudei that the Mishkan corresponds to the creation of man who is an Olam Katan, who's a world in miniature. And the Medrash goes on to explain that the menorah corresponds with the eye. The illumination and the light of the menorah is the way we see. And the shulchan corresponds to the mouth, the place that hosts the bread. And the incense altar, the mizbeach that was inside, that was the incense the ketores was burned on, that represents the sense of smell, the nose. So it's not v'yasuli mikdash, make a sanctuary, but v'shachanti b'socham. There's not one singular sanctuary. That was the Mishkan. It was temporary, it was fleeting. But in all of our lives, in our homes, Rav Usher Weiss, who was our guest a couple weeks ago, in Minchas Usher, describes what are the modern menorah and shulchan and mizbeach in our homes. What role do they play in our lives? In our homes, because that's the most sacred space in a Jewish community. It's not the shul and it's not even the mikvah. It is the Jewish home. And the kalim in our home are our dining room table, which is a holy vessel. What kind of conversation do we have there? And so on and so forth. There's a magnificent song. If you've ever been to an NCSY Shabbaton, you heard it. 16th century Kabbalist, Rav Elazar Azkari. He has an amazing song, Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, Lahadar Kivodo. I'm not going to try to sing it for you. But Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. In my heart, I will construct a sanctuary, a Mishkan, to glorify His honor. And in that sanctuary, I will place an altar to glorify His splendor. For the eternal light, I will take the fire of the Akedah. And for a sacrifice, I will offer to Him my soul. My singular soul, Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, that the Mishkan is not just about one time. It wasn't a Hora Shah, it was Ledoros. That says Rav Chaim Volozhiner, when the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, V'chein ta'asu Ledoros, it doesn't mean necessarily physically, but it means our homes, and it means in our lives, it means with our different body parts, it means with the Kalim in our homes, and so on and so forth. So that's what I want you to keep in mind as we look at this section here. V'yasisa paruches tcheles v'argaman v'tola shani v'sheish mazar ma'aseh choshev y'aseh osa kruvim. Everyone see where we are? Perek Chavav, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Chamishi. Make a partition. A paruches, we describe on our modern Aron Kodesh, the paruches, the cover in the Beis HaMikdash, the paruches, what in the Heichal, what divided the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In the actual building, what divided the main part, the sanctuary, from the smaller back part, the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Torah tells us it should be made of turquoise, purple, and scarlet wool and linen. It's twisted, and it is the result, the product of Maaseh Choshev. The product of Choshev. We'll see what that means in a minute. Yaaseh Usa Kruvim. And what is woven on this parochas? When you were in the Mishkan, or you were in the Beis HaMikdash, and you looked at this magnificent, huge curtain that divided off the Kodesh HaKadoshim, what image did you see? It did not have the Luchos. It did not say Dalef Nehemiah Talmud. It did not have sponsored by the Schwartz and whatever families, by memory of. What was on the Parochas? It says the Pasuk, Yaseh Osa Kruvim. An image of the Kruvim that sat atop the Aron inside that Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was that image that you were to encounter when you looked at the curtain, at the divider blocking off the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And you hang this curtain off of four pillars of cedar wood, acacia wood. It's covered with gold, with hooks of gold and silver sockets. V'nasatas ha-paruchas tachas ha-krasim ve'veis ha-shom ha-bibis ha-paruchas es arona idus. And you put the paruchas on the hooks and you bring it there, and inside, on the other side of the partition, you bring the aron. What was in the aron? Aron ha-bris. It had the luchos. The broken luchos, the whole luchos, the man, the original Sefer Torah. The Aron held our most sacred items, and you brought it in. The Ramban here deals with, we're not going to look at it, but the Ramban deals with the fact that the order looks different in Parshas Pekudei. Do you first hang the curtain and then bring the Aron? Do you first bring in the Aron and then hang the curtain? And why is the order different in Parshas Pekudei? Which way did it really go? The Ramban here deals with that question. We're not going to get into it. Benasatas ha-kaporas al-aron ha-idus b'kodesh ha-kadoshim. Once the aron is where it belongs, in the Holy of Holies, behind the curtain, then you place the lid, the cover of the kruvim. B'samtes ha-shachon mechutz la-parochas v'zeminorah nochas ha-shachon atzela mishkan ha-imana. And then you bring in only when the aron is in place and the curtain is hanging, then you place the other utensils, the other items, namely the menorah opposite the table, on the south side of the Mishkan, and the table, the Shulchan, you put on the north side. Vasisa masach the Pesach ha'Oel tchelas v'argamam v'salashin v'sheish mazar. And now you make another curtain. What's this curtain? This curtain is the entrance to the Heichal. Right, the Heichal. You had a wall which was a boundary of the Mishkan, but it was outdoors. It was a courtyard. In this courtyard, you had a building. The building was the Heichal. You had a curtain that was your entranceway into the building, and the second curtain was the parochas that blocked off the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now the Torah is describing the outer curtain, the masach, that blocks the Ohel Moed, the building, from the courtyard. It's made also out of tcheles v'argaman. It's made out of turquoise, purple, and scarlet wool, twisted linen. But here it's not described as maaseh choshev. The parochas is maaseh choshev. The masach, the outer curtain, is described rather as maaseh rokein. V'asisa l'masach hamisha amudei shita v'tzipisi osam zahav avayam zahav. It doesn't have four poles holding it. It has five. And they too are made out of acacia wood covered in gold. And their hooks are made of gold. And you put them in chamisha adnei nechoshes. You put them not in four sockets, but five sockets. And not made from silver, but made from copper. So the two curtains, this is the section describing the curtains. There's the outer curtain, the masach, and there's the inner curtain, the parochas. One inner curtain is made maaseh choshev, the outer curtain is made maaseh rokein. The inner curtain is made on four poles, and the outer curtain is on five poles. The inner curtain is on four sockets made of silver, and the outer curtain is on five sockets made of copper. You see where I'm heading. Why the difference is here, which the Kli Yakar immediately addresses. Look at the Kli Yakar, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Says the Kli Yakar, "B'shloshet dvarim nivdal parochas zeh amavde mikodesh kodesh kadoshim min amasach amavde ben ohel moed lachatzar hamishkan." There are three fundamental differences between the inner curtain and the outer curtain. Ki haparochas hayam ma'isa choshev. The inner curtain that blocks off the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, is called, it's deemed, the work of choshev. Kruvim. It has the kruvim embroidered. V'amasach hayam ma'isa rokim. הפרוכס היה על ארבע עמודים והמסך על חמישה עמודים. הפרוכס היה על אדני כסף והמסך על אדני נחושס. These are the three differences we pointed out. So explaining this, Rav Ephraim Zalman Lunshitz, the Kli Yakar. Lufi shebebeis ha-kodesh ha-kadoshim, lo haya kohen rishoy likonesh sham kiyim biyom ha-kippurim. The high priest only entered this area once a year on Yom Kippur. Shebonim shelu yisrael ha-malachi ha-sharis. What did you have to be? What proved your worthiness on Yom Kippur to be forgiven? You had to be angelic. You had to be like the impression, like the image of the Kruvim. On Yom Kippur, the physical world is irrelevant. It's unimportant. We fast and we transcend the physical pleasures of this world. On Yom Kippur, you are not a physical being. On Yom Kippur, you are a soul. You are a masa choshev. All you are is an intellect, a rational being, a soul. You're not weighed down by the body and the temptations and the distractions. There is no inner tension or conflict between your animal soul and your godly soul. On Yom Kippur, for 24, 25 hours a year, we transcend. We have this, what's that called when we try to extract a soul from a body and sorcery and seance or whatever it is. We basically extract our soul from our body and we live as souls without a body for Yom Kippur. So as the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's reminded, first of all, the image of the Kruvim reminds him that in order to be worthy to enter, you have to be angelic, like the image of the Kruvim. You remember? It's Maisa Choshev. What made it Maisa Choshev? What made it Maisa Choshev is, I am not a knitter, or a tailor, or embroiderer, but it's very impressive, apparently, to embroider something and have it come out on the other side exactly the same. Right? To be able to have it appear the same takes tremendous talent and skill. That's the Maisa Choshev of the Paruchas. That a person who sees it is reminded that they do not have permission, they don't have license to enter unless they are angelic, maisa choshev, unless they are an intellect, a soul, that they are not brought down, they are not weighed down by the body. And he goes on to explain all the differences based on this. I want to see some other things, and we're going to run out of time. You can look at the rest of the Kli Yakar, but he notices those differences, and therefore the role of the paroches is to serve as a reminder throughout the year, but in particular to the Kohen Gadol, as he is about to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Look at the handout I gave you. The handout I gave you is a small section from a new sefer that I'm into. It's called Tal Lechaim. Tal Lechaim is written by a Rav Chaim Cohen in Israel, in Yerushalayim. He's also known by his nickname. His nickname is, he's the Chalban. What is a Chalban? A milkman. Since when is a great rabbi referred to as a milkman? That doesn't sound like a very complimentary description. So I'll tell you, you can Google him, you'll see about him, it's unbelievable. He's a clean-shaven guy in a blue shirt, wearing a cap, who works in a cheese factory. And he went under the radar his whole life, until he was discovered that even though he looked totally anonymous and like he blended in his worker's clothing, clean-shaven, with his cap in the cheese factory, the truth is it was discovered that he's an outstanding Talmid Chacham, and more, he's a Mekubal who has been spending his life going into these hideouts with other Mekubalim studying and learning Kabbalah. And so once he was discovered, then he was recruited to give Shiurim, and his Shiurim are now being published. Crazy amount of Svarim are coming out from the Chalban, coming out from the simple milkman. And they're beautiful Svarim in Amunah and Kabbalah, and this Svarim on Chumash are called Talalei Chaim. So here he describes in the section, this is part of a longer essay, and I'm just giving this to you as part of a long essay, because I want to see his approach to the role of the paroches, and then we'll see the Rav's perspective, and then I'm already late to something, so I got to get out of here. Hinei Bofen Shlishi, Efshe Levayeres in Yanam Velomar, Sheshloshes HaMakomos HaElu, Makbimen LeShloshes Dargos Ba'adam. This is his third attempt to understand the Chalban, Rav Chaim Cohen. Third explanation of the three different areas of the Mishkan. There was the outer courtyard, there was the building, the Heichal, and which was the Kodesh, and there was the Kodesh HaKadashim. So he says maybe these three sections of the Mishkan correspond with the three parts of a human being, namely the Moach, the lev, and the kaved. In Jewish thought, in machshava, in Kabbalah, we can be defined by the difference between our moach, the brain. The brain houses the intellect, rational thinking. The lev houses the emotion. The heart houses the emotion. And the kaved is the liver. What does the liver house? The physical yetzer hara, the physical world. Hamekbilim lenefesh ruach uneshama. So the Chabban says that the brain, the heart, and the liver correspond with the Kabbalistic components of our soul, the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama. Keyadua hamuach, hamoach huazach v'ha'elyum. The brain is the highest. It's the most superior. And certainly for the Rambam, and based on Aristotle, the brain is the most superior. The heart can get you into trouble, and your liver can get you into trouble, the yetzer hara, the world of emotion, but the brain, the intellect, if it's functioning on all cylinders, if the intellect is working in its most potent way, it is the highest. Halev, hametzeah, v'hakaved hu atachton. The heart is the middle, and the liver is the physical world, desire, and that is the lowest. Hamoach shayach l'machshava ha'elyona. The brain corresponds with the highest thoughts. Halev al kochos ha'hargasha. Your capacity to feel is the heart. V'hakaved al kochos ha'tfiyah machomriyim. And the liver corresponds with the natural order and the natural physical world. Moshe Cordovero, the great Kabbalist, called the brain, the heart, and the liver muskal, murgash, umutpa. Avodas ha-kaved, on the second paragraph, hi im hadam va-taivos. Where is the avoda of the liver? What does it mean to overcome the temptation, to overcome the battle with the kaved? That's with blood. That's with the taiva, desire. Hanefesh ha-behemes. That's the animal impulse in us. That animal impulse, that animal instinct, that animal desire. And zoi avodas ha-karbonas ba'azara. That's the mizbeach that's outside in the courtyard. That's the general space where you bring the animal. What are you doing when you slaughter the animal? You're saying, God, there's an animal in me. I sometimes am tempted to act like an animal, eat like a pig, act like an animal, follow my impulse, follow my desire. And when I sacrifice this animal, God, I'm sacrificing the animal that's inside me. So where does that happen? In the first space, which is outside, in the azara. Avodas halev, the avodas hahargasha. The next way that man battles is not to overcome acting like an animal. Above that is to overcome and channel our emotions. Ava v'yira, to channel love and awe. Simcha panimis, to feel inner joy. Kisufei kodesh ritzonos esanim al Hashem yizbarach, to direct all of our feeling, not to be led by our emotion astray, and not to be confused and clouded by emotion, but to channel emotion, to direct our emotion towards the service of the Almighty. Zoi avodas panim behechal. Where is the place of the lev, of the heart, of emotion? Where do we work on that avoda? That's in the hechel. Hamechuvenes keneged bechinas haruach, which corresponds with the ruach soul. Elyonu pnimis yoser hi avodas hamoach. What's the inner, what's the highest level of avoda that we do? First, we overcome acting like an animal. You bring that korban, you sacrifice the animal in you. That's in the azara, that's the outside space. Then comes working on our emotion, channeling, directing, controlling our emotion. That's the avodas halev. Where does that happen? In the kodesh, in the hechel. And then comes the highest level, which is avodas hamoach. Kedua halev mudbal kiyachol hargasha v'chavayashalo le'ein aruch migvalos ha-seichel. Sometimes the heart leads your emotions, not being directed by your brain, right? Your emotion, an emotional person, can sometimes be self-destructive, can inflict damage on themselves. Hamoach yachol hisbonein binyanim gvohim v'atziliyim. But the brain is capable of contemplating and has the capacity for absorbing the highest things. The heart can only feel what's opposite it. Someone has to tug on the heartstrings for the heart to feel. But the brain is capable of getting the highest things. So the brain is the inner sanctuary of the person. It's the place where we achieve the highest levels and the highest and purest thoughts. Inyan ze makbil lebechinas haneshama. And that corresponds with the highest level of the soul. She'ikar mishkana b'moach. Where is the highest level of the soul? It's not in our loins. It's not in our heart. It's in our head. V'amdam ki yaduah ha'aron ha'im ha'shulash b'chinos zu l'malam mizeh. Ha'aron ha'kaporis v'akruvim. You see these three levels also represented even in the ark itself. Ha'aron atzmo romez al b'chinos ha'neshama. Ha'kaporis al b'chinos ha'chaya v'akruvim al b'chinos ha'yechida. Okay, if you didn't follow all that, that's okay. But here's the part that I wanted to get to. The bottom half of the page. Be'inyan ze'ef sh'alo sifu l'tzayin ha'paruchas. Now that you understand, says the milkman, the Chalban, Rav Chaim Cohen, now that you understand this metaphysic approach to the architecture of the Mishkan, the outside part represents the loins, the physical component of who we are, and therefore the avoda we do there is to slaughter the animal, the behema, the animal in us. The inner part, the heichal, represents the lev, the place of emotion. And that's where we channel the ava and the yira, we channel emotion. And that, and elsewhere in this essay he talks about, that's why what happens there is the shulchan and the menorah and so on. And the innermost sanctuary of a person is their brain, is their capacity to think and to dream and to imagine and to grasp and to hold on to. And now he explains, now you understand why there's a paroches. Binyan ze'ef shalo sifu l'tzayisha paroches, hamavdila bin kodesh ha-kadoshim, mora lana yisod chashav b'avodas Hashem. The paroches serves a very important purpose in our serving Hashem, to divide the brain and the heart. Hanogea b'avodas v'yadata hayom, shubachinas ha-moach. Notice that the Torah always tells us, you are capable of knowing today, v'yadata hayom, ata ha-resa l'das. But what do you do with that das? Where does it go? Ulacharav v'hashevosa elavavecha. V'yadata hayom v'hashevosa elavavecha. Know today in your brain, and then place it where? In your heart. Shu b'chinas ha'leif. Ha'paroches yamasach ha'mavdil shebalav ateis ha'par ha'gadol sh'yish be'amoach v'aleif. You have to understand there's a fundamental difference between the brain and the heart. You know, they say the farthest distance between any two things in the universe is the difference between our head and our heart. How many things do we know intellectually, but we fail to put into practice? Ask every addict and chain smoker if they know that smoking is a form of suicide. They'll say yes. You could put every study in front of them, every research, they understand it intellectually. But to put into practice, to get our heart to generate the behavior that our brain is supposed to know, is an enormous division. The head can be on firing on all cylinders and going higher and higher, but the heart has to go slowly, slowly. In your brain, you can grasp things. But in practice, it's hard to live it. A person knows they shouldn't be arrogant, and yet their heart leads them to those thoughts that make you arrogant. There's a big divide, it's very hard. In the Mishnah in Avos, our rabbis taught us that we should not be among those whom our chachma, our wisdom, that our brain is outpacing ma'asav, our actions. The brain has to dictate the heart, the actions. It's not enough, you know, I sometimes meet people, I say, you don't know me, and maybe you don't think the way I live my life, you look at me, but in my head, I'm a chassid, I'm a tzaddik. In my head, I believe this is right. And I say, that's nice in your head. I hope your head gets to Olam Haba, because your body is not necessarily going to go there. So it's nice that you have things in your head. It's nice. It's easy to grasp in. You can be moved by a shir, by a dvar Torah, by a song, by an experience. In your head, you came to all kinds of conclusions. But to get it to actually happen with your heart is a much, much more difficult. So Chazal told us in the third parak of Avos, you should not be chachmasa meruba mima'asav. What you have in your head shouldn't be more than what you're doing with your feet. You got to put into practice what you're doing. So he says, ha'paruches ba lomar. So now the paruches, this curtain teaches us, sheyesh merchak gadol bin ha'moach v'alev. The curtain reminds us that there's a big divide, that there's a great distance between the head and the heart. V'tzarach ha'adam lahakir hitev is derach tikun ha'lev. And you have to know how to get through it. You have to know how to pierce it. Shalo yispatel lachshov shemisich lohevin davar mesuyim. Don't think just because you have it in your brain, it's automatically going to be in your heart. That your heart has to go slowly, slowly. And the paroches therefore represents midas ha'anava. That paroches represents the humility to recognize that just because you have it in your head doesn't mean you have it in your heart. That just because you have a big brain doesn't mean you have a big heart. And that divide, that paroches that sits there, is the reminder of ahashivosa elavavecha. Take what's behind the curtain and bring it out in front of the curtain. Take the Kodesh HaKadoshim and bring it out here and place it in the place in the Mishkan, which was the lev, which was the avoda in the heart. So that is the Chalban, the milkman's approach. The three different sections of the Mishkan represent three components of man, the Ruach, and the neshama and so on, and also represent the lev, the moach, the lev, and the kaved. And the paroch has therefore serves the purpose of instilling a sense of humility in us to remind us that we have to go slowly and that there's this divide and we have to take what's behind the curtain and bring it out in front. But I want to close with the insight of Rabbi Soloveitchik in the Soloveitchik Chumash. And he says the following, I think this is so relevant for our generation. From the time I was young, I learned to restrain my feelings. This is what he's writing. And the dividing curtain shall separate you from between the holy and holy of holies. This is the Rav comment on the idea that there's a divider blocking the Kodesh HaKadosh. From the time I was young, said the Rav, I learned to restrain my feelings and not to demonstrate what was happening in my emotional world. My father would say that the holier and more intimate the feeling, the more it should be concealed. There's a hidden curtain that separates between one's interior and the exterior, and the dividing curtain shall separate for you between the holy and holy of holies. What location is more sanctified than the inner sanctum of one's emotional life? If all is going well and one's heart overflows with happiness, he should reveal the deep interior of his soul to God, but he should not reveal it to others, lest a stranger profane his holy of holies. If on the other hand, someone is in dire straits, mired in a cloud of pain and suffering, finding himself abandoned and alone, he should reveal his thoughts before the Creator. He should cry to him and supplicate behind the curtain. A stranger should not approach the holy of holies, lest his apathy he profanes the sanctuary of the mute pain that burdens the sufferer. And no man shall be in the tent of meeting when he comes to the effect atonement in the holy until he comes out. The Kohen Gadol's rendezvous with his Creator is in solitude. What an incredible insight. Our innermost feelings, our intimate experiences, are our Kodesh HaKadoshim. And they need a paroches for them to remain invaluable, for them to remain as special as they are. They can't be exposed to the world. They need a paroches. There needs to be some modesty, some self-restraint, some privacy. Why do I say this is relevant more than ever? Because of social media, where everyone's posting every thought, every emotion, every experience. One of the banes of my existence are the public displays of affection on social media, where the guy is writing his mother on Mother's Day on Facebook, the most on and on, you're the greatest mother, I'll never forget, and the mother, and what you mean to me, you're the greatest mother. There's only one problem. His mother doesn't even have Facebook, and he didn't buy a card, and he didn't send her a card, and he's not making a phone call. He put it on Facebook so the whole world thinks he's the greatest son that ever lived, and his mother doesn't even know how to use the internet. But he's posting on Facebook, right? On the anniversary, he's telling his wife, 17 years ago today, God brought you into my life, and it was the greatest day, and it's only been great since then. The most affectionate, loving thing, right? But it turns out at home he's in a fight with her because he didn't take the garbage out last night. He doesn't really care, and he's not even... But on Facebook, oh, he's the husband of the century. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, right? You went on every vacation and you put up pictures for the world to see and be jealous of the pictures of you and your children, the vacation, how amazing it was. Your little kid got his chumash and he knew the whole parsha by heart already before he could read and before he had the chumash. So you post on Facebook the little video and your little kid and you're pinching his chin. Amazing and how good you feel about that. There's no such thing as privacy anymore. No one's hanging the parochas in front of their Kodesh HaKadoshim. There has to be a Kodesh HaKadoshim in our lives. There has to be a Holy of Holies, an inner sanctuary where we preserve our intimate feelings, where we reserve those experiences, where we say them only to the people we feel closest to. Now, I think he takes it to an extreme, because I'll tell you what the Rav continues with. He writes, my father never kissed me. When he took leave of... I'm sure that's how they reacted in his shir when the Rav said this. My father never kissed me, he said. When he took leave of me, he would press my hand and say, go in peace and may God watch over you. A casual onlooker were to hear these routine words might be taken aback and mumble to himself, oh, dry, brisk, or coldness. But that observer witnessed only the exterior, that which was outside the curtain of my father's personality, and did not comprehend that his interior, his Kodesh HaKadoshim, was full of mercy and compassion, containing a refined and bold love for his children, incessantly concerned about their welfare, sacrificing himself for their future. His entire being was overwhelmed with love. At the same time, he was careful not to violate the warning, and no man shall be in the tent of meeting, protecting the modesty of his emotional life. So again, maybe it's a little extreme, and it is a little brisker, right, that you can't kiss your children because they should just know how much you love them, but that feeling, it's okay to be affectionate. However, I think the first half of what the Rav says is so relevant in our generation. we need to have a holy of holies. There's nothing holy anymore. Everyone has access to everything. Everyone is exposed to everything, literally in the way we dress, but emotionally there's no tznius. There's no modesty in our emotions. Everyone knows how we feel and what we think and where we're going and how we react and that, because we post it and we share it and we tell it over coffee, and there needs to be a parochas. There has to be a curtain protecting our Holy of Holies, because if there's no parochas protecting our Holy of Holies, we've lost the capacity for intimacy, emotional intimacy, conversational intimacy, physical intimacy. If everything is shared and exposed, there is no longer intimacy. So we saw, Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, that the ideas from our Parsha are not relevant only to the physical Mishkan, but are relevant to every aspect of our lives. And I think both the Chaban's attitude towards the Parochas, which is the humility dividing our head from our heart and remembering, it's not enough to have it in your head, you have to bring it out in your heart. And the Rav's insight, that the Parochas protects our Kodesh HaKadoshim in our life, these are just two examples of how we can be learning our Parsha and see it as incredibly, that the symbolism is and the metaphors are amazingly relevant, inspiring, and instructive for our lives as well. I'm sorry I can't stay at Shmuz, I have to run, but wishing everybody a fantastic day.